Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 8 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, thank you for that, especially if you've been listening already. We consider that a sign of a high intelligence, and you're going to know what I mean in just a minute if you don't already. The books are called Don't Know Much About History, Don't Know Much About Mythology. But ladies and gentlemen, it's all a ruse, because Kenneth C. Davis, the author of these books, he actually knows a lot about this stuff. He's our good friend. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, a best-selling author because of his outstanding books. And you've heard him on my show many times. You've seen his handsome face on television many times. And he's our good friend, Ken Davis. Welcome back to the show.
It's always a pleasure. Good morning, and a happy Labor Day weekend to you.
It's good to have you here, Ken. Thanks very much. And by the way, before I forget, on Labor Day morning, the plan right now is for you to be on, at least on the Today Show. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm scheduled to be on the Today Show Monday morning and out on the plaza, apparently.
All right.
with some of the folks. Nice people there.
So that'll be a good gig for you, and we're looking forward to seeing your handsome face out there. Ken, Labor Day is so much, especially from a history standpoint, it's rich in the story of Labor Day has a rich historical background, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and it's a story that's really not told much in school, and certainly has fallen from favor in some ways today, because it's the story of the beginnings of the organized labor movement in America. And to be honest, the organized labor movement has seen better days in American history and certainly in recent times. The holiday really was signed into law first in 1894 by Grover Cleveland. Now, Grover Cleveland wasn't especially a friend of the working man back then, but it was a kind of a bone toss to the average worker back then, because this was a time, we are very spoiled, of course, in America today. This was a time when the working person in America did not have a very good situation. When we think about all of the things we take for granted, whether you agree with them as a business person or politically or not, but the minimum wage, the 8-hour workday, time and a half for overtime, days off, the end of child labor.
40-hour work week was unheard of in those days.
Week. They were all created in the 1930s during the Depression, but
right.
Then really out of the work of the trade union movement. And, of course, you go back to the late 19th century, the time when Labor Day was created, things were terrible for the average worker. They had very few protections, and nobody was standing up for them.
Well, and of course, it really took my research on this, Ken, and we'll compare notes here. It really took the events around the Pullman strike to get Grover Cleveland to do what he did, right?
There were several strikes that factored into this decision prominently. The beginnings of it actually go back to 1882 in New York, where I happen
right.
to be this morning. 10,000.
But you weren't there then, though, right?
I wasn't there then.
Okay.
I'm old, but not that old. The beginnings go back to the to 1882. 10,000, which was a lot of people in New York back then, even for New York. 10,000 men walked down the street on the first Labor Day. They were members of the Joiners and Carpenters Union primarily, and other tradesmen, and they were essentially campaigning for a day that would be a celebration of the working man, but more importantly, to their point, a day to really organize trade unions, which were for the most part in the 1880s not allowed by most businesses, not accepted. And usually anything like a strike was put down not only with the full force of the company bringing in strike breakers and often armed guards, the Pinkertons, but very often with the full force of the government as well.
Here's a quote from one of the guys who is, there's some argument about whether Matthew McGuire or Peter McGuire founded Labor Day, but this is from Peter McGuire, who was the co-founder of the American Federation of Labor. He said he first proposed a day to honor those, and this is quotes, folks, who from rude nature have delved and carved all the grandeur we behold, end quote. Quick break. Ken Davis and I will be right back. We got a lot more history of Labor Day to come after these messages. Here's the Godfather of Soul, a hard-working man in his day, to take us out.
Papa's got a brand new bag. And this is crazy to see.
We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Kenneth C. Davis, the author of Don't Know Much About History, and we're talking about Labor Day. And Ken, I want to read one more quote, and then we'll let you talk to us some more about Labor Day. This is from 1898 by Samuel Gompers, who was the head of the American Federation of Labor. He called Labor Day, quote, "The day for which the toilers in past centuries looked forward, when their rights and their wrongs would be discussed, that the workers of our day may not only lay down their tools of labor for a holiday, but upon which they may touch shoulders in marching phalanx and feel the stronger for it," end quote. And of course, Ken, as we know, they also had picnics.
Sure, they had picnics and barbecues, and that all came along later. But certainly the real, from the union point of view, and you mentioned the McGuires of New York, and
by the way, they were not related, folks. They actually spell their name differently. Go ahead.
Right, Peter McGuire was president of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. Now, this was part of, there was no AFL-CIO back then. This was a very early pioneering union called the Knights of Labor, and it was quite a successful union in those days. 700,000 strong at one point, which was a big number. Mm-hmm. And they were the most successful in striking the railroads that belonged to Jay Gould, who was one of the most famous or infamous. The so-called robber barons, a very, very wealthy man. We have to remember, this was the time of the so-called Gilded Age. Mm-hmm. There was enormous discrepancies in vast disparities of wealth in America.
There wasn't a lot of middle class.
There really was no middle class in the sense we understand it, and the very wealthy were wealthy in the extreme and conspicuous about it. This was the time when, you know, a Gould would have a dinner party and they'd roll cigarettes and $100 bills, and he had a trough set up once where people could dig for gold bracelets in the trough. It was the element that he was talking about. Mark Twain, they called it the Gilded Age, and that wasn't a term of
endearment.
It wasn't a term of endearment. He thought that it was gilded, meaning it was shiny on the outside but pretty cheap and awful underneath.
Right.
So this was really a tough time for the American working man and woman, but mostly men, of course. And the big event of that period, and has something to do with Labor Day, is the Haymarket Square riot in Chicago in 1886. This was a strike, started with a strike against the McCormick Reaper Company, another really big business. McCormick, of course, made all the farm equipment back then. The strike was in Chicago. There was a rally. Of course, McCormick brought in strike workers or scabs. And at the rally, there was a bomb thrown. And and several policemen were killed by this bomb. Mm-hmm. The union leaders were rounded up. They were called anarchists. They were called socialists. There was a quick trial. A lot of them were ruled guilty quickly, and several of them executed. A few
wow.
others had commuted later on. But mm-hmm. the thing about it was that this was, because it happened in May, this was the inspiration for a lot of places to adopt May Day as a Labor Day, as a Workers' Day. And
right.
that was certainly the tradition in most of Europe and continues to this day. The American unions and President Cleveland didn't want a day that was going to be associated with this very violent riot and had connotations of anarchism and socialism. So that's why they, when Labor Day was created officially, it was moved to September. Most mm-hmm. places around the world celebrate Labor Day or their Workers' Day on May 1st in honor of the Haymarket Square riot.
Right. And then, of course, after that, there was the riot at the Pullman factory, which where troops were actually sent in, and
troops
some people
were
killed. Were killed at that, weren't they?
Troops were often sent into to these the miners' strike. There was a terrible strike there where strikers were killed. This was that's why I said at that time in America, the business interests had the full support and cooperation of the government. A lot of people would say just like today, but. There was no one really speaking for the average working man at that time.
Well, one of the things that I think it's important to bring these things up is if you enjoy the day off, the Labor Day off, as an employee, as a worker, these are the people on whose shoulders you stand.
It's absolutely true, and I think it's important to understand how far we have come. And, of course, the union movement in America has been under fire for a long time now. Back in the 1960s, about a third of American workers were unionized, belonged to trade unions.
Yep.
That's down to about 12% today, which is an astonishing idea.
And I think, if you go to private sector, take the government out, I think it's more like about 8%.
Probably is, and of course, the largest single union is the teachers' union, the
right.
National Education Association,
exactly.
and a second teachers' union, the American Federation Teachers, is right.
Ken, hold that thought. We're gonna take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm gonna pay tribute to the people who pay for those days off. Ten till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
In the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, then I'll watch them roll away.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Ken Davis. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History, also Don't Know Much About Mythology. How many of these books have you written, Ken?
Let's see, there are now 7 books for adults and about 17 for kids.
Wow.
Over the years, yeah.
Congratulations. And tell us where they can find it.
All of the Don't Know Much About books or audio tapes, most of them are available on audio for people who like to listen in their car. They're available in local bookstores and from the online booksellers as well, like Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. So I have a website, which is don'tknowmuch.com, all one word, no apostrophe. I don't sell anything there. It's just a place to go and find out a little bit more about the books.
I've got 2 grandsons, actually 3, but 2 of them are reading age, and I'm gonna go check out your kids' books and because they're little sponges for stuff like that. I'm gonna get
well. That's a great word. I go into schools a lot, and I love to visit schools, and I always get excited. I see kids, how excited kids are about learning when they're in the elementary school grades, for, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th graders, and then you get into middle school and high school, and it's like a switch gets turned. All that excitement and enthusiasm and curiosity seem to get turned off, and some of it is hormones. There's no question about that, but a lot of it has to do, I think, with the way we teach and how
and other influences like the computer and the television.
Yeah,
and video games.
It's easy to point to those things, but you any parent and any teacher can turn those things to his advantage,
and that's one of the things we have to do is
be creative about how. You can't just throw your hands up and say, "Oh, I can't get my kids away from the video game." Well, first of all, get them out of the house. That's my first piece of advice.
That's a good point.
My love for history grew up out of taking family summer vacations to places like Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York, or Valley Forge, or Gettysburg.
Right.
And I always had the sense that history didn't just happen in books.
You saw it on the ground.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that I always try and emphasize with parents.
Let's move back. Let's just get back to our Labor Day thing. You know, Ken, every Labor Day is a federal holiday. That's a paid holiday for basically everybody, except for business owners. Ken, I'm a business owner. I don't, if I get paid on Monday, which by the way I'll be here. I'll be working on Labor Day doing my show, but if I get paid, I'll be paying myself. And I'll be paying the payroll on that day for my employees. And so I don't begrudge workers having a day off, a paid day off. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But I think we ought to have a day for small business owners where there ought to be a day to recognize those people who sign the front of those paychecks for that day off, Ken. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a grand idea. I don't think it's going to happen.
Why not?
I'm sure that most small business owners would tell you that they can't afford such a thing. So
no, it wouldn't be a paid day. My idea, and I published this before, folks. In fact, it'll be in my column this week. My idea is it's on a Sunday. It's not a paid day. It's just a day that the world recognizes that somebody had to do a lot of work and take a lot of risk and go through a lot of challenges to be able to have a business where people can work and get a paid day off. I don't think that's too much to ask, Ken.
Well, it's so intrinsic to the maybe we call it the myth of the American dream, that you work and start a little business of yourself, of your own, and you work and your family works and you work hard, and that's the ideal, isn't it, for an awful lot of people. We started out not as a nation of laborers, but small farmers, the beginnings of small businesses, and that had a great deal to do with the beginnings of this country, the beginning of the small merchant who didn't like very, very much involved, of course, in the protests against the taxes from England. It was less about representation. They didn't care if they had a seat in Parliament. These taxes were killing their business.
And they still are when we're taxed too much. Ken, one last thought is that workers, employees, when you take off on Monday and you get paid, be sure to thank your employer for that opportunity. Ken, you get the last word.
Well, I just want to add that I'll be working on Monday.
Yep.
So,
and you'll be on the Today Show, right?
As a self-employed person, yeah, that's work for me.
Yeah. We'll look forward to seeing you there, Ken, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here another day. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all you do.
Don't know much about anything. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. See you later, Ken Davis, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.